So tonight I'm going to launch our new theme for the year for Sanka Nights. So as I said earlier, this is our third year starting Sanka Night at the Centre. And the first year we looked at the theme of Sangha, and then last year we looked at the theme of faith. And this year we're entering the year of skillful action. And the core expression that I'm using to expand upon, well, what does that term skillful action mean, is this very, I think, one of the most famous phrases that you'll get in Buddhism, which is cease to do evil, learn to do good, and purify the heart. So tonight's talk, I'm going to briefly talk a bit about why we have Sangha Night and why I came to, how I came to this theme. And then I'm going to unpack what does that mean? What did the Buddha mean when he talked about cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the heart? So yeah, that's what I'm hoping to do in the next probably 40 minutes or so. I never know quite how long I'll talk for, so we'll just see. So yeah, just touching in, I suppose it's good to remember to connect, or why do we have Sangha Night at the centre? So I moved to Birmingham from Tauralokas, so I used to live at Tauralokas, which is a women's retreat centre in Shropshire, and I moved here just over 4 years ago. And when I moved to Birmingham, I found it really hard to know what how to plug in at the centre. So I was quite busy doing other things. I was running a project, the Triratna Young Buddhist Project. So it's a network-wide project trying to encourage and support young people to practice in Triratna. And so I was quite busy doing that. And I didn't have a lot of time to do teaching, say, at the centre, run classes and stuff. But I wanted to come to the centre, and it didn't really feel like there was anywhere to plug in at that point. So when I became chair of the centre 2.5 years ago, for me, one of the, well, in a way, the core thing that I really wanted to build at the Sangha was a space, a regular space, where the Sangha came together. So that's a space where any order member, mitra, friend would be really welcome to be in our beautiful shrine room and to practice together, to practice meditation, to practice friendship, to practice puja, to study the Dharma, to go deeper together. So in a way, that was where Sangha Night was born. In a way, it was born out of a vision of being Sangha together. That's what we're doing right now, and also building Sangha in the way that us, you, because I can't do this on my own, coming together and being at Sangha Night creates a heart. It creates a core around other things. Yeah, other people can join in because we're here as a core, as a heart of people being the heart of the Sangha. So in a way, Sangha Night is, in a way, that's the vision that I've always had. It's a bit of a heart for our community at the Birmingham Buddhist Centre. And some people can come every week, and some people can come once a month, and some people come once a year. But in a way, that it's a thread of continuity of practice that we aspire that other people can join in with, and are really, really welcome to join in. And in a way, because friendship, Sangha, well, Sangha means community, but friendship is at the heart of what we do here in Triratna. This culture of friendship is what enables us to go deeper. I think it's what makes us distinctive as a Buddhist community. I'm thinking quite a lot about the importance of spiritual friendship at the moment. So no doubt you'll hear more about friendship over the year to come. Yeah, and I think for me as chair of the centre, I really love being able to host Sangha Night. It's something about kind of bringing my own inspirations into the centre and enabling inspirations of others to be expressed in this space. Okay, so why this theme? Yeah, why the theme of skillful action? Why the theme of cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the heart? Well, to be fair, I played around with a lot of themes, probably over the last 6 months. Played with a lot of themes, but nothing really stuck for me. And then one day I was about to go off on retreat in December, and I was washing up at home, as one does, staring out into my garden. And I thought, I know what the theme needs to be. It needs to be skillful action. And then this other phrase came to me. And in a way, it was quite a spontaneous sense for me of skillful action. So then I had to think about, okay, well, why? Not, is that just a whim or a good idea? Or what's behind that for me? And I think when I reflected on the theme for another month before putting it out there in paper to you all, really reflect on why do I think this is what we need to put at the heart of our Sanghanaya, the heart of our community for the next year. And I thought, well, because this phrase, skillful action, for me summarizes the whole of the Buddha's path. And this phrase, this from the Buddha, this teaching from the Buddha, cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the heart, summarizes the whole of the path. Yeah. So in this phrase, in this expression, we have the whole path of Buddhism. And I think as a Buddhist community, there's one thing, we learn the Dharma through ideas. But we're not here just to learn the Dharma, we're here to live the Dharma. And I think in order to live the Dharma, we need very simple, but clear and penetrating expressions of the Dharma that we can absorb, that we can internalize, that we can really take very deeply to heart. So we can know really what it means to live a Buddhist life. And to live a Buddhist life is to cease to do evil, learn to do good, and purify the heart. That is the Buddhist path. That is what we're here to do, yeah? So that is why I've put this very much at the heart of what we're going to explore together at Sangha Night this year. And we'll explore it in lots of ways, yeah? So cease to do evil. We're going to have a whole series on the precepts coming up at the end of February, looking at people giving personal talks, exploring and sharing their very personal practice of the Buddhist precepts. So we will be exploring ethics, the precepts, learning to do good. Well, there's a lot there in meditation or many other ways that we learn to do good in Buddhism, dana, generosity, and purifying the heart, wisdom. Yeah, there's a lot that we could learn there in terms of exploring the Buddha's wisdom. So we'll be exploring very much these phrases through lots of different series that help us go deeper with these different aspects. So you might notice, those of you who have got an eye for Buddhist lists, that I've already conflated cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the heart with the threefold path of ethics, meditation and wisdom. Now, I thought that was just my good idea, but actually it's very classic conflation. So that was actually quite I was quite pleased with myself because I was thinking about it. So I kind of thought, oh, that links to the three-part path. And then, so in preparation for this talk, I've actually done quite a lot of work, a lot of study. So I've been reading Sangharakshita's seminars from 1981, 82 and 83. So that's where Sangharakshita would have sat in seminar with maybe eight people and really gone into texts like the Dhammapada in a lot of detail. And you can read those seminars, so people asking him questions and them exploring those those texts together. They're all freely available online on Free Buddhist Audio. So I spent the last three evenings immersed, and most of Sunday immersed in these seminars from the 1980s. I was probably about this big at that time. That was quite satisfying as well. And, well, it's been lovely, actually. Most of you will know that Sankaracharya, our teacher and founder in Triratna, died in the autumn. And last week I was away at Adhisthana at the winter chairs meeting. So I go, as chair of the centre, I go on chairs meetings twice a year. And at this last meeting, we spent a whole day kind of remembering Bhante Sankaracharya and reflecting on his life. And I suppose I was reflecting quite a lot about us as a centre and, yeah, just how we can keep building our relationship with him and learning from Sankaracharya and his wisdom. And I guess we're very lucky in that he's left such a large legacy of books and of lectures, which is probably how most of us know him. So, yeah, I've really enjoyed spending so much time this week in his company. Yeah, through his words and his wisdom. So yeah, tonight I'll try and share some of that with you. I don't know why I have notes in front of me because I don't really keep them. So this saying, cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the heart, actually it's a bit of a Buddhist legend, which... Well, I was chatting with Shantaprabha about it over lunch on Monday. It's debatable whether this actually happened, but it is a legend. And Sankaracharya tells this legend in when he's writing about perfect emotion in the Noble Eightfold Path series. So this is what Sankaracharya, how he tells the story. There is an oft-repeated anecdote from Buddhist history which well illustrates this point. It appears in ancient times Indian monks used to go from India to China in large numbers to preach the Dharma. And that at one period of Chinese history, there was a very pious Chinese emperor who was always eager to welcome great sages and teachers from India. Now one day, it so happened that one of the greatest of the Indian sages turned up in the Chinese capital, and the emperor, as soon as he heard the news, was very pleased indeed. He thought he would have a wonderful philosophical discussion with this newly arrived teacher. So the teacher was invited to the palace, where he was received with due pomp and ceremony. When all the formalities were over, and the teacher and the emperor had taken their seats, the emperor put his first question. Tell me, he said, what is the fundamental principle of Buddhism? And he sat back, waiting to get an answer straight from the horse's mouth, as it were. And the teacher replied, cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the heart. This is the fundamental principle of Buddhism. The emperor, however, was rather taken aback. He had heard that all before. Yes, we've usually heard it all before. So the emperor said to the sage, is that all? Is that the fundamental principle of Buddhism? Yes, the sage said, that's all. Cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the heart. That is indeed the fundamental principle of Buddhism. And the emperor said, but this is so simple. Even a child of three can understand that, he protests. Yes, your majesty, said the teacher, that is quite true. It is so simple that even a child of three can understand it. But so difficult that even an old man of 80 cannot put it into practice. So in a way, that's why we need these simple truths. We need these simple truths so that we've got half a chance to absorb them in our hearts, to really unpack and know for ourselves what they really mean and learn how to put them into practice. Because Buddhism is about putting into practice. It's not about nice ideas. Yeah, it's about putting it into practice. So let's look a bit at this verse. So I'll chant it in Pali and then I'll read it to you in English. Sabapapasara karanam kusalasa upasampada sachita pariyatapanam etang buddhanam sasanam. The not doing of anything evil, undertaking to do what is skillful, complete purification of the mind. This is the ordinance of the enlightened ones. And it's verse 183 of the Dhammapada. So I made a handout for you, and I've completely forgotten to print it. Bad. You come back next week and you get a copy. So all these words in Pali, so the handout has the words in Pali, it has the English translation, okay? So if it's going over your head, don't worry about it. If you really want it, I can give it to you in this handout next week, okay? So, but it is quite fascinating sometimes. So most of you who know me know I'm not someone to particularly spend a lot of time talking about Pali and its meanings and its words and its translation. But actually, in this talk, I am going to do a bit of that as well as talking about why I think it's relevant to us. So this first line, sabapapasa karanam. So karanam literally means not doing. And papa is predominantly translated as evil. So that's not a very popular word, is it, for most of us? I don't know. I can't read all of your minds, so you can tell me later. But if you're anything like me, that word kind of sticks a bit in the guts. I kind of think, oh, don't know if I like that word. So it's interesting. So in the second line, kusalasa upasampada, which literally means to accept or to do what is skillful. So you have this word kusala, which is skillful. So that's interesting. So why do we have the not doing of anything evil, but the learning to do what is skillful? Why don't we have the not doing of anything skillful? So in a way, what unskillful? So we could have, you could see that these two words, evil and unskillful, are the same. Yeah, they are literally opposites or equivalent in terms of these two lines. Yeah, if you've got a coin, you've got the ceasing of doing evil on one side and you've got the learning of doing good on the other side. They're the same things, aren't they? If you think of our precepts, we're ceasing to do harm and we're practicing deeds of loving kindness. We're not taking the not given and we're practicing open-handed generosity. So you can see that these two things are two sides of the same coin, yeah? So why did the Buddha not use the word ceasing to do what is unskillful? Why do we use the word evil? And I found that quite interesting, and I suppose I think, well, if I was sat in a room with Sankaracharya right now, I'd ask him that sort of question, which is why it's really good to go back to the seminars, because that's exactly what people asked him back in the 1980s. They said, well, so why? Are these the same? Do they mean the same thing? And why? Why use that word? So anyway, so I found this all quite interesting. So Sankaracharya is quite clear in a way that in meaning they are the same thing. So if you really struggle with the word evil and you want to in your own mind use the word unskillful, that's fine. They do mean essentially the same thing. They are synonymous, yeah? So then why, they debate it at some length, so if you're interested, it's worth looking it up. But Sankara actually goes on to say, he says, Papa, evil has more of an emotional connotation than akusala, than unskillful. It's more sort of emotionally loaded. So he goes on to say that kusala, skillful, is more of a neutral term. You could say almost a scientific term or a psychological term. So the point he's making is, it's like the Buddha is shouting to us, we need to stop doing what's unhelpful in our lives. It's strong, we need to stop it. And the reason we need to stop it is because it causes us suffering. Yeah? It's not that we need to stop it to be good people. Yeah, so we're not practicing ethics. We're not practicing being less unskillful because we're trying to be good Buddhists. It's not about being good. We need to learn to be less unskillful because being unskillful causes us and other beings suffering. That is the point. So he uses the word papa because he wants to wake us up. He wants us to wake up to the fact that our unskillfulness causes us suffering and it causes other people suffering. So I was thinking about this and I was thinking about examples from my own life. And I was remembering my first retreat that I did in India. And I heard, some people know this story because I tell it quite a lot, but I heard the Four Noble Truths for the first time. So there is suffering. Our suffering comes from our wanting things to be different. And that there is a path to lead from suffering, and that is the Noble Eightfold Path. That is the Four Noble Truths. And it really, really hit me very strongly that my wanting to things to be different than the way they are was what caused me suffering. But it didn't only cause me suffering, it caused other people suffering. And actually, I was more motivated to change my unskillful behaviour. So I was more motivated to change my unskillful behaviour because I didn't want to keep causing suffering for others. I mean, it was a bonus that it would mean that I suffered. But I could really see that my neurotic, slightly anxious, needy, whatever kind of behaviours was causing a lot of suffering for other people. Yeah? It was causing suffering for me too, but it was also causing suffering for others. So yeah, I think in a way this first one, ceasing to do evil, is really a call for us to take ethics really seriously. So ethics is not just a tick box exercise. In fact, I've got a few friends, order member friends, that really see ethics as the cutting edge of their practice. So they really analyse very strongly their speech every day, their actions every day, their thoughts every day, and they make amends, they make precepts, they make apologies where they speak out of turn or they speak badly. And they really see this as the cutting edge of their practice. I can't say it is the cutting edge of my practice, much as I'd love to be able to sit here and say that. I think I definitely am more in danger of thinking, yeah, well, I haven't killed anyone recently. I'm a fairly good person. So I think it's easy to think, I'm a fairly good person, I'm fairly ethical, box ticked. But actually, I think there's so much more to be mined in ceasing to do what is evil, to really think about what am I doing that is unskillful. So now all those times when we find ourselves in unhelpful mental states, you know, thinking, you know, caught up in, or, you know, self-criticism or self-blame, like those are ethical issues, yeah? They are us harming ourselves, yeah? And when I find myself doing that in those mental states of feeling like I'm not good enough or my body's not good enough, then actually it's my practice of ethics to say, I don't need to keep putting all those darts in myself. Yeah, the Buddha's teaching of the two darts of suffering, that we can take those darts out. We don't need to be loading on all those critical thoughts. We can just come back to our baseline experience. We can cultivate metta for ourselves. And that might feel like a really steep hill and a really long journey. And we just keep doing it day after day. And sometimes we're back at the bottom again, and that's okay. Yeah, we just keep going. So ethics is something to really mine, actually. It's not something to skip over. So we're going to, as I say, we will be exploring ethics quite an engaging way, I think, in the next couple of months. And I think it's good to have an image, yeah? So my image for this section of ethics, of ceasing to do evil, is the mudra of action. Yeah? So we have these different mudras in Buddhism, and I want to offer you the mudra of action. It's like, really, let's take action at looking at what we do that is not helping us, and let's transform it. Okay, the second one, kusala sa upasampada. So as I said, kusala means skillful, and that's traditionally defined as whatever is not associated with greed, hatred, and delusion. And if you find that a bit confusing, it's traditionally associated with tranquility, contentment, metta, and wisdom. So that's the opposite of those things. And upasampa literally means acceptance, to accept, to acquire, to obtain, to take upon oneself all that is skillful. It was also, upasampada is also the word that used to be associated with bhikkhu ordination. So it's also a kind of really taking on. And Bhante says this lovely thing. He says, it is oneself becoming an embodiment of the skillful, the embodiment of skillful states of mind, skillful emotions, the transformation of oneself into a more skilled individual. Which I thought was a very beautiful description of what it is that I think I'm doing. I don't know what it is you think you're doing, but that is what it is I think I'm doing. Yeah, that I'm trying to transform myself into the embodiment of a more skillful individual. Because I believe as a more skillful individual, I have more capacity to be of use to the world. Yeah. So this becoming more skillful is often related to meditation. And obviously in meditation, we cultivate skillful states of mind, greater mindfulness through the mindfulness of breathing, greater metta through the metta bhavana. So we're trying meditation. It is that bringing about of positive, skillful mental events. So, you know, meditation is crucial to this second stage of learning to do good. So you think, as an example, I would talk to you about my practice of mindfulness of breathing and the metta bhavana over the last 18 years, and I could. I could tell you loads of great stories about how those practices have helped me transform and how they still continue to be the bedrock of my practice and how I truly believe that meditation does transform our hearts and minds. So I could definitely, stand in that as my experience. But actually what I really wanted to talk about in terms of learning to do good was the path of service. Or of generosity, which isn't something that's very in fashion these days, or something we talk very much about. Well, we talk about dana in terms of money, and that is all good. Money is all good. But actually, dana is much more than money. Generosity is much more than giving money. So when I moved to Taraloka, the chairwoman at the time there, Sadnandi, who's now chairwoman at Astana. She's just very, very inspiring woman. a very important role model for me, and she would definitely say her life is one of service. And so I had quite a lot of role models, other people as well, Parami as well, who, yeah, they have very much committed their lives to Triratna, to sharing the Dharma, through creating community, through building a culture of friendship. And they really served that vision. They served the vision of Triratna, which is one of a vision of the Dharma within this culture of friendship for the benefit of all beings. That is the vision of Triratna. And I was very inspired in a way, and really appreciated, felt like I grew a lot through being around other people that embodied a life of service. And I was very struck by that, this idea that we can go beyond our self-interest, that we can move from ideas of, well, of relating to life not as what can we get, but what can we give. And that's just been a very profound shift, and one that I really live by. So to a great extent, I've spent most of the last 15 years working full time for Triratna, and you know, I love that, and I get a lot from it. You know, I get a lot of opportunity to give, to create context, to build friendships. But you know, it's also an act of generosity. You know, and I do it as a sense of service, of putting something, Triratna, which is a bigger vision of the Dharma, as the central thing in my life before myself, in a way. And I just encourage you all to think about what's the central thing in your life, and what is it you get from this place, and what is it you give, and could you give? Are you giving what you really want to give? And if you were going to give something more or something different, what would it be? And that's because I ask that question not because we need you to give more, although your gifts are always incredibly welcome and we do need your gifts, but more because I believe that giving is a fundamental way in which we learn to do good. We learn to go beyond ourselves through giving to something bigger than ourselves. And I have learned so much from that, and I'd encourage you to really engage with that as best you can. See your life as an offering. Your life as an offering. So you've got this life. You've got your energy. What are you going to do with it? And the image, the mudra, of course, is the mudra of open-handed generosity. So this learning to do good is this mudra, and I offer you this mudra of open-handed generosity. Yeah, it's a mudra that inspires my life very, very deeply. And I just encourage you to play with it. Okay, Satchitta Pariyadarpanam. So chitta is the word for heart. And sometimes this line is talked about as purifying the mind, and sometimes it's talked about as purifying the heart. So in Buddhism, these things aren't as distinct as sometimes we think of mind here, don't we, and heart here. So in a way, in Buddhism, really, it's more true to talk about it as the heart-mind. The heart-mind. So chitta is one's heart, mind, consciousness, and thought. So satchitta is one's thoughts, one's mind, one's heart. And pariyadarpanam is purification, sometimes translated as cleansing. So this line is very much about purifying one's thoughts and one's heart. And what are we purifying one's heart, one's mind from? So that's the obvious question, isn't it? If we talk about purifying, what are we purifying ourselves of? So we're purifying ourselves of unskillful mental states that cause us suffering. And we're purifying ourselves of ignorance, of wrong views. Yeah. So this line, this purifying the heart, is very much connected to the path of wisdom. And that's because in a way, in Buddhism, the Buddha would say that the greatest stain really is the stain of ignorance. Yeah, ignorance. So it is a bit like we're drunk and we don't realise. We're just walking around in this cloud, and then we wait to wake up. Is to wake up from an ignorance. We don't really see things clearly. Yeah, we see things through this lens of me, of mine, of fixed. We have a very small, narrow perspective. And that's not because we're bad, it's just because we don't see things clearly. And as we practice Buddhism, as we cease to do evil and we learn to do good, it is like the mud of all that unclarity of it settles. And through that settling, wisdom arises, clearness arises, awakeness arises. Yeah? So we need to, that's where these things, they're a river that we wind. Yeah? We cease to do evil, we learn to do good, we purify our heart. It's like we're cleaning glasses of a dharmic lens. So we often talk to it when we fall in love of seeing a person through rose-tinted glasses. And then suddenly the rose-tinted glasses stop being quite so rose-tinted and we think, oh, I don't know if you've ever had that experience. I've had it a few times. And I think with the Dharma, we are actively trying to build Dharma-tinted glasses. Yeah, so it's kind of using the analogy the opposite way around. So we're trying to see life through the lens of the Dharma. We're trying to see life. We're trying to remember that life is impermanent. We're trying to remember that life isn't fixed, it's changing. We're trying to remember that compassion is possible, that metta is possible as a response in every moment. Yeah. So I think wisdom is about going beyond this book learning and learning to see life through this dharmic lens. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking for myself, it's like ceasing to do evil is like noticing when I'm having really critical thoughts about myself and then actively thinking, come on, Singamati, that's not true. But there's an active. I'm noticing and there's an active effort to change, to think, okay, that thoughts aren't facts. That's not true. Now I need to learn to do good. Okay, maybe I need some more self-metta. Can I generate a bit of self-metta right now? And wisdom is more like the thought arises, I'm not good enough. And I don't need to make that effort. Because I know, somewhere in my being, that that's not true. It's just a thought and it's going to go. There's a kind of momentum of just saying, oh yeah, it's that thing arising and it's going. And so the momentum to bring that thought into check and to develop metta is more like happening. It's a bit like you've pedaled up the hill on your bicycle, ceasing to do evil and learning to do good. And then wisdom is when you're coming down the other side and you've got a bit of momentum behind that that practice of ethic and that learning to do good, the cultivation of that. And I was thinking, well, if ceasing to do evil is the mudra of action, and learning to do good is this mudra of generosity, what is the mudra of wisdom? This is definitely me making this up. As far as I know, this is not a traditionalist. Although if it is, you come and tell me, I'll be delighted. So I thought, actually, the mudra of wisdom is the earth-touching mudra. So for those of you that are familiar with the story of the Buddha, when he's on the meditation seat and he's set up for enlightenment and he's opening to that space of awakening within him, and Mara, the kind of all those forces in himself that hold him back, comes and attacks him, doesn't want him to break through to see things. And what does the Buddha do? The Buddha touches the earth. It's a very powerful mudra. You can do it physically or emotionally all the time. And that touching, as he touches the earth, he calls the earth goddess to witness. And the earth goddess witnesses his wisdom. He witnesses, yes, you can break through those forces that are holding you back. You do not need to be identified with them anymore. You can awaken. And it's in that wisdom, that awakening arises. So I offer you this mudra of earth. So this final line, etam buddhanang sasanam, this etam buddhanang, Buddhas plural, sasanam often translates as teaching, but Sankaracharya is really clear, it's more than teaching, it's more like ordinance is the word that he uses in his translation of the Dhammapada. He uses this word ordinance. I have no idea what that word really means. But what he says is that I think this is really interesting. So he says, Satanam, it comes from a verb meaning to rule or to govern. So it's a connotation of being an imperative, something that you feel or experience as absolutely binding upon you. So it could be translated as a directive or a mandate. The Satanam is the Dharma as a system that people actually follow, the Dharma as embodied in a concrete way of life, individual or collective. So when we say Etam Buddhanam Satanam, this is the teaching of the Buddha, we're really saying this is the Buddha's mandate, this is the Buddha's directive, this is the Buddha's way of life, this is the Buddha's teaching. So it's not just a teaching in the sense of a written thing, yeah, that you read in a book or that you know. It's a way of living. So ceasing to do evil, learning to do good, purifying the heart is the way of living the Buddha's life. It's a way of living his teaching. So yeah, I really hope that this phrase and this year of skillful action, which is a bit of a brief summary of that phrase, can really inspire us this year. So I think for me last year at Sangha Night, I felt like I learned loads through the different teachers and teachings and workshops and practices that we did together. And I really hope that this year in this theme can help us continue to go deeper. I hope that we can all learn to live this phrase, learn to take it on, to internalize it, to take it to heart. I think that taking to heart will enable us to build confidence in ourselves and each other as Buddhists and Buddhist practitioners. It will enable us to be wholehearted and more effective in our practice. And ultimately we do that to free ourselves from suffering, free the suffering we create in the world, and help us to be more free and more awakened.